We go behind this week's headlines that some longtime restaurants in downtown St. Louis are closing. The loss of places like Mike Shannon's, Harry's, The Doubler, J-Bucks, and others has some saying it's a bad sign for downtown vibrancy and growth, and that Ballpark Village has muscled competition out of business. Joining me to talk about it is Bob Ray, the president of the Downtown St. Louis Restaurant and Bar Association. He is also the owner of the Washington Avenue Post, a coffee shop. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Are people overreacting? They're saying this signals the death of downtown St. Louis.
Well, it's certainly not the death of downtown St. Louis. But I think there's going to have to be a reinvention of what downtown St. Louis is. In the past, you know, a lot of these bars and restaurants opened up catering to St. Louis Cardinal fans and sports fans to come downtown before the games. When Ballpark Village opened up, it took a lot of that business away. And if I had to compare it to something, I would say if you had a downtown full of arcades and then suddenly put Disneyland right in the middle of it, it's going to have a negative economic impact.
Well, you're pointing the finger then at Ballpark Village.
No, I think that Ballpark Village is the reality is that they've taken a certain amount of the business.
Harry says taken 70%.
It's taken some from, it's taken a lot more from some than it has from others. People that were primarily designed to deal with sports fans before games, like Mike Shannon's, for instance, took a gigantic hit, and there's no doubt about it. Now, if you were a specialty fine dining restaurant, you're not going to have the same impact. I think that the most important thing that we can do now as restaurants and as a downtown community is decide what sort of identity we want to have as we move forward. What's going to define downtown for the residents that live down there and for the tourist economy?
Yeah. Well, I would have to assume, given Shannon's location and what that building is and Harry's and some of the others, that they're going to be replaced by another restaurant or another bar.
I would say that it's probably likely. But then again, you know, if you're somebody that's going to come in and put a million or more than $1 million investment into a restaurant and a small business, you're going to want some predictability about what's going to go in around you and what your customer base is going to be. So if something does go in there, it's not going to be a mere reflection of what Shannon's was. It's going to be something different.
So what's your overall picture in terms of the future of downtown?
I think for downtown to develop the way it needs to develop, the residents downtown, the businesses downtown, and the city need to get together and have a conversation about how we want to develop downtown and what sort of incentives we want to bring the type of businesses and retail downtown that we need to support both the tourist economy and a residential economy that's growing and growing and growing. Because the most successful businesses downtown have been the ones that have been able to cater to the residents down there, because we, over the last decade, have had thousands and thousands of residents move downtown. My business caters to residents, and I'm doing very well.
Joe is chomping at the bit here. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, fair or unfair, how much is the perception that crime, there's been several high-profile, assaults and other things over the last few months, including some of Cardinals fans. How much has that affected some of this? I mean, fair or unfair, sometimes perception then becomes the reality when people decide that they don't want to be wandering around outside Ballpark Village.
And I agree. Perception is everything. And I find it interesting because I'm a transplant, and a lot of the people that live downtown are transplants from California, from New York, from all around the country. And it's interesting, the expectation for safety that we have in St. Louis for downtown. While me being from Oakland and San Francisco, I think this is the safest downtown that I've ever seen. And so my expectations are met. People in the county here, you're never going to get a 100% safety downtown. But downtown itself, the residents that live there, it's a really, really safe community. I would compare it to Mayberry. But the perception, you're right, is everything.
That's one I haven't heard before, comparing it to Mayberry, but we'll let that go. Dale Singer also has a question. We've got all these reporters in the room. You're going to get a lot of questions here, Bob.
Bob, I was just wondering, if other restaurants do go into these places that have been vacated, do you think they're going to be locally owned, or do you think they're going to be national chains, or what do you think is going to come in?
I hear there's a Chipotle coming. I really would like to see more locally owned mom-and-pops restaurants. I think that that's what the character of downtown is now, and I'd like to preserve that. I think the reality is we'll probably start getting more and more chains. I think that IKEA moving close to downtown was a signal that we're going to be moved to, and Ballpark Village are signals that we're going to move more towards a corporate identity moving downtown.
We can't ignore the fact that Union Station is going to be experiencing a new life, too, in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. Gerard Kraft is opening a new restaurant, presumably a somewhat pricey one downtown.
I don't think it's going to be pricey like the one he's got in Clayton. It's going to be located over on Washington, the 600 block. I think that that's tailored more towards the tourist economy down there by the convention center, but I think it's going to be great pasta, and I'm glad he's coming down.
Yeah, if it's anything like his other places, it's going to be okay.
Are there thoughts about, since there's so many restaurants within just a few months that have left or are leaving, is there thoughts about maybe there should be something other than restaurants in some of those buildings? Some of those spaces. I'm just interested in kind of if there's thoughts about more of a mix downtown.
I think that's the big question. Is there's no? I think the biggest problem with downtown or St. Louis in general is there is no plan for growth. There's no incentives to bring certain types of businesses down to create the type of downtown that we want to have. And so it's left up to who's willing to come down here and invest. And there should be more direction than that. I think there's a lot of restaurants, and we need more services, and we need more diversity in what we have downtown. And we need some zoning that really shows and guides what's going to locate and what's going to locate where to support the residents down here and the tourist economy. Until that happens, I think that the lack of predictability about what's going down there is actually a hindrance to development downtown.
Well, we're going to have to let it go at that, Bob Ray. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Bob is the president of Downtown St. Louis Restaurant and Bar Association. You know, it's not always possible for reporters to put everything they know about a story into their reports. That's why we'll be spending some time on our Friday broadcast to go behind the headlines with members of our reporting team. With me in studio today, you've already met them, our political reporter Joe Manis and our education reporter Dale Singer. We'll continue on now with some of the things that you guys have been involved in this week. Joe, I'll start with you. The State of the State was your big story, one of your big stories this week. But you've covered all of Governor Nixon's stories, his speeches. How have you seen him change over those 8 years?
Well, in some ways, I was surprised that this speech I interviewed him several weeks ago for a big profile I did, and frankly, his speech didn't put much beyond that, and I was rather surprised. He didn't use that to try to, hit one out of the park, even though he knew that the Republicans in the audience wouldn't be receptive to whatever he said. He decided not to take any risks, and I think that was a decision based on what he hopes will be the reception among the legislature for his final bills. I think some of it's because I've known the guy. He's not like my best friend or anything, but as a reporter, I've covered him. I was thinking about it since 1988. And he's not a big risk taker as he was way back. Of course, most of us aren't. I remember when he was running for the U.S. Senate back then, and he took a canoe down the Merrimack, and he was trying to show how polluted it was and what needed to be done to help. Now, Nixon's not going to ride any canoes now. I mean, that's not his style anymore. He is trying to have more of a bipartisan image. And I remember when he first became governor, one of my stark things is that the first JJ dinner, which has now been renamed the Truman Dinner, way back in 2009, just to maybe 6 months after he took office, which this is the big Democratic dinner. And he made a rather partisan speech saying, he wanted to help elect more Democrats to General Assembly and this and that. Well, he went back to Jeff City and he got hammered. I mean, because it was the dinner was in the spring that year, and the rest of the session, he was just getting smacked by Republican legislators left and right. Since then, and even in a political environment, rarely does he even use the name Democrat, Republican. He tries to, even at political events, he tries to give somewhat of a nonpartisan good government type speech. He leaves the attacks to Claire McCaskill and others. And I think that's sort of the way his speech was. He's trying to forge, trying to be above the politics. And in some ways that may help him, in some ways it may not. He's also, I think, in some ways feeling his way about what he's going to do when he leaves office, because he can't run for reelection. Yeah. He's not. I think it's unclear if he's got any hopes of any sort of post if Hillary Clinton becomes president. And he's already endorsed her. So if Bernie Sanders ends up in, he's got nothing. But it's just interesting to kind of watch how he's spending like today. He's not even in Jeff City. He's doing travels around the state on economic stuff.
He has evolved over these 8 years, as all of us have, I suppose, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, but he's evolved in some ways that, I mean, even some Democrats feel that he's not engaged enough in the Capitol. Yeah. Then there's others close to him that says that even if he was, he would get it slammed by Republicans. So he figures, what's the point? He doesn't have close personal relationships with Republican legislators like he did at the beginning. He's definitely evolving.
Yes. Dale, you had a question for
Joe. I just thought it was interesting. He's in the same type of situation as Barack Obama is in terms of their final State of the Union, State of the State address, and speaking to a legislature that is dominated by the other party. But Obama's speech was more inspirational, more aspirational. How would you compare the two?
Well, I was somewhat surprised because I know Nixon does have a personal vision where he'd like to see the state to go. And he had talked to me about that a few weeks ago. And I was surprised he really didn't get into that in the speech. He did talk about his legacy and what he hopes to be remembered for and the key issues that he believes where he's made a difference. But he didn't really like wax poetic about what he would like to see the state do or not do in the next 10 years. I was surprised that he didn't take any risks at all. I mean, really. I mean, even his few unexpected comments were relatively minor.
Dale, was he an education governor?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. He talks about education a lot, but if you look at the actual numbers, I mean, depending on whose figure you believe, the foundation formula for the education for kindergarten through 12th grade is underfunded by as much as $500 million. Higher education is suffering.
But that's not his fault. I mean, the money's not there, correct?
Well, right. But, I mean, if you judge a governor by the actual accomplishments that happened during his term as opposed to what he would like to see, it depends. I mean, again, he talks about education. He's a champion for education. He's a cheerleader for education. But education financially in the state is not doing all that well.
Right. One of your stories this week dealt, of course, with the Ferguson the school board. What's going on behind the scenes there? There's a lawsuit that has been filed or is being filed?
Yeah. Those of us with long history, you know, you go back to 1988 with Governor Nixon. I go back to the mid-70s with the Ferguson-Florissant School District when it was actually created by a federal judge in a racially tinged lawsuit out of the three North County districts back there, which were Ferguson, Kinloch, and Berkeley were combined. We used to call it Ferkenberg. And then they became the Ferguson-Florissant. And it's always been race has always been a big issue there. The lawsuit that was filed by the ACLU charged that because members of the Ferguson-Florissant school board are elected at large, as most elections of the school boards in Missouri are held, that African Americans don't get the proper representation on the board that they should. And they also point out that 80% of the school children in Ferguson-Florissant are African American. So that kind of shortchanges them.
Yeah. Well, other things that you've been dealing with, there's a prospect of losing a valued member of the education community here, in North County. Our superintendent of schools in St. Louis City almost left. I guess there was a chance he could have gone to Los Angeles. what's going on behind the scenes here.
Yeah, the Rams left, but Kelvin Adams is staying in St. Right. Louis. In terms of Tiffany Anderson, the woman who has won a national acclaim for being the superintendent in Jennings, she was one of two finalists for the job of superintendent in Topeka, Kansas. I understand the school board met last night and settled on a candidate, but they haven't said who that candidate is. They're trying to come up with the final contract, and that announcement could come as early as later this afternoon or this evening. If she were to leave, it would be a big blow to Jennings, obviously, because since she took over, they've gone from very shaky to full accreditation, and she has won notice from NPR and the Washington Post and Education Week. A lot of people have said she is doing with students who live in poverty what a lot of districts can do.
Are she and Kelvin Adams looking to get out of town, or have they been just approached by the outsiders to lure them away?
It's a very good question that neither one of them has been willing to answer. Whenever you talk to Kelvin Adams and ask questions like that, he always says, I don't want to worry about things like that. I want to concentrate on the job I want to do in St. Louis. And when I managed to get in touch with Tiffany Anderson the other day, she said, I can't talk about any of this until it's all settled, and then we can talk about it later. In her case, her husband and a daughter live in the Kansas City area, and she's been commuting back and forth ever since she took over as superintendent in Jennings. So she has made it very clear she wouldn't mind living a little closer to her family.
Right. Well, that would certainly make some sense, wouldn't it?
Right.
Joe, I want to turn back to you, and the time we have left, we have a tweet here in which the writer says, playing it safe by Mr. Nixon means consideration of a plan to run for higher office, of course. Now, nobody knows what he's going to do and what higher office could there be. You've all but discounted that.
Yes. Well, for one thing, all you got to do is look at his campaign committee. In Missouri, they can raise unlimited amounts and they can change like what it's for and they can sit on it. Jay Nixon has raised virtually no money for almost 2 years, especially the last year. So, I mean, he still has some money in his campaign bank account. But if he was looking at running for something, now, if he was running for Congress, you can't shift the state money to Congress. But there's no belief that he's going to be doing that. And but he has not raised, as I said, hardly any money. And so that's usually a sign that that's not what they're looking at. I think, if anything, what he's hoping for is to get some sort of appointment. I mean, at some point before Ferguson blew up and hurt his reputation, there had been talk that he was hoping for some sort of cabinet position. FEMA had been, you know, one of the ones that had been talked about.
And
that
he's performed well in the wake of disasters.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And there have been a lot of people. I've asked him this, and he's kind of sidestepped it. But there had been a lot of opinions that privately that he would like to be looked at for FEMA or something else. Right now, I mean, post-Ferguson, it's been a little tougher for him, especially among Democrats, which may have been why there was a couple things in his speech, such as the thing for LGBT, a couple things that are sending signals to out east where the Democrats are that, hey, I am for those things.
I've got to wrap this up, but there's also talk about the corporate world and academia. He could fit in.
Possibly.
As well.
Yeah, he's a lawyer. So I'm sure he's going to be on short list to become somebody's rainmaker. There have been speculation for a while about him possibly trying to be the next chief of the University of Missouri system, or at least the president of Mizzou. There have been legislators, Republican legislators, have been proposing legislation to try to block that, to say that a governor couldn't do it just because. But that hasn't gone anywhere. But that's one of the things that is talked about.
I've got to wrap it up there. What do you think? Jay Nixon at Mizzou?
I don't think so. I mean, the bill that Joe was talking about said that any curator who was put on the board by a particular person could not vote for that person for president of the university system. And it didn't pass, but it sent a pretty strong signal.
Got to leave it at that. Thank you so much, Joe Manis and Dale Singer, for being with us. My thanks also to Bob Ray, who was with us in the first part of the segment. Coming up, we have a Facebook project that is nothing if not an ambitious one. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.